Welcome to the Hirschfeld Century Podcast. I'm Catherine Eastman, the Archives Manager of the Al Hirschfeld Foundation, and I am joined by the one and only...
David Leopold, Creative Director of the Al Hirschfeld Foundation. Today we're going to be talking about our latest online exhibition, The Hirschfeld Time Machine, the 90s. This is the first in a series of decade explorations.
Yes, so hop in your DeLorean, open that weird door, and turn on the flux capacitor, because we are going back in time to the 1990s.
We wanted to go back to a time that was far enough away, but that Catherine could still remember.
That's true. I'm a 90s child, just barely. Or no, I am a 90s
child. You're definitely
I'm 1990, so I am in that. So before we get started, though, and getting into the exhibition, don't forget, when you're listening to the podcast, either on the web or on your phone, you can go to the show notes always, and there is a beautiful big link to the online exhibition, so you can follow along as we're talking about the pieces. As always, it's always best to see the images as we're talking about them, so you can appreciate them the way we are right now.
If you want to think about my handsome profile, that's perfectly fine, but it'll be much more interesting to look at the drawing.
Trust me, you're going to want to open the exhibition page.
It's true. Now, the 1990s, not only is it the decade that Catherine was born, but it was the start of my professional association with Hirschfeld. A few months before Catherine was born, I started working with Hirschfeld, started very simply. I got asked to organize the archive of his work, and I started to visit him usually at least once a week, every week in his studio on 95th Street between Park and Lexington. And it was a great period. He was 86 years old when I met him, and he was no more 86 than I am now.
Wow.
He was immune to time. And as one friend would later tell me, the only difference between Al at 29 and 99 was at 99 his hair was white. But he was still doing all the same things. And we would traditionally think that an artist who has been working now for more than 70 years would be coming to sort of the twilight, that he would be doing less, that his moment in the sun had passed. And that was completely untrue for Hirschfeld. Despite being in the 90s himself, this was one of his most active decades of his entire career.
Yeah, there are lots of drawings from the 90s and lots of great drawings from the 90s. You might think that by 86 years old, his talent might start to decline or his faculties are waning. No, these are just as good as you've seen Hirschfeld throughout his whole career.
And he's not only drawing for the New York Times, he's in his seventh decade of doing that, but he also is drawing for so many other publications. You know, the first things that are appearing online are coming around this time, and it turns out that Hirschfeld's work was perfect for the online world because in the early days when all images were very bitmapped, somehow his line always looked good. Mm. It's also the decade that he subjected himself to being the subject of a Oscar-nominated documentary, The Lion King, the Al Hirschfeld story, directed by Susan Dreyfus, which was released in 1996. She had been working on it since the late 80s.
Oh, wow.
And at one point he said to me, oh, I don't think I'll be alive when this comes out. But not only was he alive when it came out, he was around for the DVD release. Mm. I mean, he was really one of those people who was immune to time. And he was doing some of the most interesting work of his career. When we did the exhibition at the New York Historical Society back in 2015, we left the last wall of the exhibition for drawings he did in the last 18 months of his life. And while that wasn't exactly the 1990s, it gives you a good idea. And we put up these drawings that were really, in terms of his drawing quality, some of the best things he had ever done.
Yeah, agree.
So he really, I've said it before, his work runs counter to what we think of most artists' careers, where they spend a long time getting there, they have their peak moment, and then there's the inevitable decline. Hirschfeld had started an upward climb when he was in his 20s, and it continued all the way to the very end.
So let's start the year I was born, 1990 with the piano lesson.
It's the first piece in the exhibition, and I think it's important because it's an August Wilson play, and probably among the most important plays that were written in the 1980s and 90s are Wilson's The Pittsburgh Cycle, which were 10 plays, each set in a different decade, that aimed to capture the Black experience in the 20th century. The piano lesson was at the Walter Kerr Theater, and the reason I remember that is because on the back wall of the newly named Walter Kerr Theater was a Hirschfeld drawing of Walter Kerr, who was a great friend of Hirschfeld's. And for me, it was a chance to go visit an original drawing that I didn't get to see that often.
I remember the first time I saw that original drawing in the Walter Kerr Theater when we were seeing Hadestown.
Sure.
And I saw the original right in the back. I went up and looked at it. I was like, oh, that's nice. And then I went to David and I said, why is there a drawing of Richard Burton in here? Because it looks just like Richard Burton. So I'm going to link to that drawing. Please tell me I'm right. It looks like Richard Burton.
I can see where you were. It also looks exactly like Walter Kerr.
I hope so.
Who would have been very flattered to be compared to Richard Burton.
Yeah, I'll have to take your word on that.
But the piano lesson was actually a great play. And the star of it was the actor Charles Dutton. And he commanded the stage like few people. Hirschfeld would do a great Friday drawing of him that we included in our Lost in the Stars exhibition. So you should check that out. But it really gave Hirschfeld an opportunity to look at the a sort of new theatrical landscape. You know, August Wilson was Hirschfeld had been drawing Black stage performances since the 1920s. But as we showed in Lost in the Stars, there was great plays written by and starring Black actors and playwrights. And this was sort of a culmination of what Hirschfeld saw in his career. So on the opposite end, not really the opposite end, but on a different end of the spectrum, is instead of a new play by a remarkable Black playwright, we have a classic written by two white men, but really quite remarkable white men, Rodgers and Hammerstein. There was a revival at Lincoln Center of Carousel. And now up until that point in America, when people did Rodgers and Hammerstein, it was all about sweetness and light.
Frou-frou, fun,
yes.
Family-filled fun.
You know, Surrey with the Fringe on top. People perceived it as corn.
Right.
You know, it wasn't serious.
Yeah.
Nicholas Heitner had done this production of Carousel at the National Theater in London, and they brought it over, and they recast it with American actors, including a very young Audra McDonald in what I think was her Broadway debut. She didn't make the drawing, but the drawing shows a carousel that's very different than the original drawing that he did in 1945 when the show came out.
Which is literally like on a merry-go-round.
Yes.
Yes. Family fun for all.
where this image is quite dark. Mm-hmm. And indeed, this was a dark production. It didn't change anything.
Right.
It really gave a different focus. I mean, Billy Bigelow he beats his wife.
Right.
You know, he's not a very nice person. And this showed that without taking away anything from the musical as we knew it, and in fact, added a lot to it.
Mm-hmm. A lot more depth.
A lot more depth. I thought it was a fascinating production. Alas, Al Hirschfeld, it didn't work for him.
Mm.
And he told me that his wife, Dolly Haas, fell asleep during the show, which was very unusual.
It's not a good review.
In Dolly's defense, she was already sick and she would die 6 months later. But when Dolly fell asleep, Hirschfeld understood that it would be a hit because he knew that the things that he thought were hits were flops and vice versa. and it was a big hit. And it was for Audra McDonald, it was a real coming out party, and really for everybody in the cast. Michael Hayden, it was a very important show for, and it was just a great production.
I do love this drawing because I am partial to the drawings where he uses that speckle effect. It's always very effective, and it makes it look so beautiful.
Without a doubt. And of course, he did this in a very old-fashioned way. He masked off the drawing with masking tape, and he dipped a toothbrush into his inkwell and sprayed out the ink that you see in the drawing. And it's really very effective, and I think he captured the spirit of the production, even if it may not look exactly what the show looked like. We're not going to talk about every drawing in the exhibition, but I did want to point out the drawing of Julia Roberts, who was America's sweetheart at this time. She had been in Pretty Woman. She had been in a lot of movies that everyone loved her. And in fact, you might not remember, Catherine, because you were maybe 6 years old.
Maybe I do. Let's see.
She was to get married to an actor by the name of Jason Patrick. And it was gossip column fodder. It was a very big deal. And right before the wedding, she disappeared and ran off with what we eventually found out was Kiefer Sutherland.
What happened to Lyle Lovett?
That's later.
Oh. So no, Catherine does not remember this story.
In the annals of history, it is not an important story. But so she was sort of, no one knew where she was.
Runaway bride.
It was kind of like that. I don't know who was looking. I mean, I'm sure the paparazzi were looking and things like that. But the average person didn't know and probably didn't care.
There weren't manhunts out right, for Julia Roberts.
Her picture would never appeared on a milk carton.
Right.
But there was a gallery that sold Hirschfeld's work on Madison Avenue, and I happened to be in there one day, and this young couple come in, and they start asking questions, and they said, oh, you're very lucky. Hirschfeld's archivist is here today, and they bring me to these people to me, and these people ask questions, and of course, I talk about Hirschfeld, as is my wont to do. And as I'm looking at this couple, he was a very handsome man. And I looked at this woman, I said, you know, she kind of looks like a young Julia Roberts. She had her hair pulled back. She was wearing very little makeup. And she just, I mean, she was an attractive woman, but I thought, oh, God, she reminds me of Julia Roberts. And then they left. You know, we spent, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes talking, and they left. And I went back to whatever I was doing, and the woman who managed the gallery came over to me and she said, do you know who that was? I said, I have no idea. She says, that was Julia Roberts. And I thought, well, at least my powers of perception are not completely terrible. And this drawing was done within a year of that visit. Mm. I can't say it was caused by that, but her talent agency, her agent, commissioned this drawing for her.
Interesting.
So I'd like to think that we had some effect on Julia Roberts.
Yeah. I'd like to point out these 90s eyebrows she has.
The hair, too.
A victim of the 90s.
Yeah. It's really quite a wonderful piece.
It is a really beautiful portrait of her.
That I looked think. More like her then than it does now.
Well, sure.
He would.
You could say that about every Hirschfeld.
Oh, well, Carol Channing always looked the same.
Yeah.
It's the first of three drawings he did of Julia Roberts. He would eventually do a color piece for The New Yorker. And then she's also in the Academy Award nominees in 2001.
Yes. Yep.
So you see, and that was, I think, an Oscar-winning role, Erin Brockovich. Mm. So in some ways, you get a little, even in just three drawings, you get three important moments in Julia Roberts' life or career.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
Today's Hirschfeld Century podcast is brought to you by the Seinfeld White Glossy Mug. This mug is good for coffee, tea, cocoa, or anything that you might like to drink. It can also be used for soup.
I like to use my Hirschfeld mugs as pen holders.
You can do that as well. Order the Seinfeld mug today and use the promo code Seinfeld20 to get 20% off of the Seinfeld White Glossy Mug. I want to talk about another woman in the exhibition, one who I don't think gets enough attention these days, but who was incredibly important in the American theater, which is Wendy Wasserstein. She's not the first female playwright. She's not the first, you know, anything. But the plays that she wrote in the late 1980s and in the 1990s were really important high watermarks for how women were perceived on stage. She wrote good, intelligent roles for women. She talked about issues that women thought about. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't from a male perspective.
Right.
The Heidi Chronicles, you know, the I think her first play on Broadway, told the story of this woman going through life and all the, you know, an independent woman going through life with all the people who expect her to marry and have children, and the feminists who expect her to get rid of the patriarchy and do something else. And she's just trying to be Heidi.
Right.
He would draw that. Hirschfeld would draw the Heidi Chronicles and do several Friday drawings with it. He would draw the Sisters Rosenzweig and also American Daughter. And those were both done at Lincoln Center, I believe. She won Tonys. She won Pulitzers. Actually, she won a Pulitzer for the Heidi Chronicles. Mm. She even wrote a wonderful children's book called Pamela's First Musical. And I think if she had lived, we would all be talking about Wendy Wasserstein plays. Mm. She had a great career and accomplished so much, but she died so young. Mm. And it's just unfortunate that we haven't been around long enough to see really great revivals of her work.
Mm. Not yet.
Not yet. It's exactly right. And I guess one other drawing that I wanted to mention was his drawing of the DreamWorks team. I don't usually think drawings of three executives are that interesting. but when the three executives include Steven Spielberg, David Geffen, and Jeffrey Katzenberg, well, my interest got a little bit more piqued.
That's a big deal.
And what's interesting is Hirschfeld's drawings appeared, let's face it, everywhere.
Yes.
And in the paper in the New York Times, they appeared everywhere.
Yep.
But up until that point, they had never appeared on the front page of the newspaper. In fact, very few drawings in contemporary times had appeared on the front page of the New York Times.
His drawings almost always appeared on the front page of the theater, arts and leisure section.
Yes.
Theater is a theater section, arts and leisure. Arts and leisure.
It started off as drama and then became drama. Arts and Leisure.
I see. So people will say, no, I saw them on the front page of the paper. That was the theater section.
Correct.
But this is the first time a Hirschfeld drawing appeared on the front page.
Exactly.
Top of the fold. Was it top of the fold?
No, it was bottom of the fold.
Oh, it was bottom of the fold.
Yeah, maybe so there one it is. Day. Work harder, Hirschfeld.
Bottom of the fold, but on the front page.
He would eventually get a picture on the top of the fold. Which was when Carol Channing passed away.
Yes, the drawing.
His drawing of her in Hello, Dolly was on the front page. Mm-hmm. Half of it was above the fold.
When was that, 2017? No, 2019, I think.
Oh, right. That's right. Well,
so only twice
only
has
twice.
He been on the front page. Once when while he was this new drawing of the DreamWorks executives.
The only time he himself appeared on the front page was, alas, his obituary.
Yeah, sure, yes.
And the drawings didn't start until you turned into the paper. So
they wanted you to see the real deal. They wanted you to see the real deal first.
I remember opening the paper that day and getting the paper that day and seeing the drawing.
Did he know it was going to be on the front page?
I don't know if he knew it was going to be on the front page. Mm. I think he knew it was important. He got the assignment. They sent a car over with photographs of these three individuals. Mm. And he told me later, because I said, oh, front page. He's like, oh, yeah, it was crazy. You know, it was insane. Of course, that was the sign that you knew he thought it was great. He said it was insane. They sent a driver over, and he waited outside my house while I did the drawing.
No.
because they had a, you know, when you're on the front page, that deadline is immediate. Wow. You know, it's not that, you know, Arts and Leisure, he would typically have his drawing in 2 to 3 weeks before it appeared.
Oh,
but
wow.
But the front page is something that gets made up as it's really happening. Oh, there, you know, see, at that time, there were still early and late editions of the paper. You know, that page was constantly in flux.
Wow.
And this was not changing the front page of your website. This was printing papers. So he did it. And of course, you look at the drawing and you can't tell that it was done fast.
Yeah,
slow,
it must have done relatively quickly.
No. It helps to have close to 75 years of experience,
of course, yes.
Doing it, because yes. then it can, when necessary. This is not, you don't want to be the person who held a gun to Hirschfeld's head to have him do a drawing. But if you ever wondered what that would be like, well, this was it.
Mm.
You know, it was interesting. Spielberg turned out to be a fan. He would eventually commission Hirschfeld to do a drawing of Saving Private Ryan.
Yes.
And of course, DreamWorks as a whole was... One of the biggest things they did was their animation unit.
Yes.
I mean, Jeffrey Katzenberg came from Disney with the express purpose of doing better animation than Disney did.
Yes. And my childhood as a 90s child is a lot of DreamWorks animation films. So one of my favorite times working is going out to the animation studios, be it Disney, DreamWorks, or Pixar.
Right.
David can nod and laugh and talk about all the other stuff, but I get to fill him in. I'm the real kind of, what's that called? Institutional knowledge.
Yes.
Of the animation films of the 1990s. If they want to, you know, if the animators want to talk about it, I'm the one they're going to want to talk to.
It turns out I don't know my Prince of Egypt.
No.
From,
no one
Pocahontas.
Knows their Prince of Egypt like I do. No. And Spirit was my, that's how I love Bryan Adams, side note, from the Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron movie. I think one of the first, if not the first animation film to use both hand-drawn and computer animation.
I can't say.
But it was
sure.
one of the first, I believe. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, we've gone out
DreamWorks
there.
DreamWorks does have a special place in my heart. And yeah, I'm going to be honest, David, if I could work anywhere, I'm going to want to work at the DreamWorks campus. They have a whole room dedicated to cereal. You can pick out what kind of cereal you want and eat it. It's free.
It's great.
Yeah.
That whole campus is beautiful.
It is pretty fancy. Yeah.
We do get, you know, this work does lead us into some pretty interesting places. Yeah. I had my picture taken in front of a, both of us had our picture taken in front of a large statue of Shrek. That sits in the center of the
probably one
DreamWorks
of my favorite
campus.
Pictures yes. of you.
Well,
speaking of animation,
yes,
we would be remiss in the 90s to not talk about Eric Goldberg.
Really, in some ways, a very important figure in Hirschfeld's
yeah.
career in his
yes.
art.
Not even arguably so.
Yes, if you haven't heard it, you should go back and listen to our podcast with Eric, where he tells the stories of how much he loved Hirschfeld and how he met Hirschfeld and how he ended up working with Hirschfeld. Yeah. It's fascinating. There, I've rarely seen two artists who admired each other so much work together so well.
Mm.
I remember, and I'm sure I've told you this, when Hirschfeld went out to Disney to talk to animators, they were working on Pocahontas.
My favorite Disney movie.
It is her favorite Disney movie. No tattoo of it yet.
No.
But when he came back from this trip to Disney, and I said, how was it? He says, oh, you wouldn't believe it. There were 1,600 people working on the same film, you know, animators working on the same film. And he was amazed, he said, because he didn't know of any time three artists worked on the same project and didn't get into a fight.
And I think he also said it looked like one person had made the whole film.
Yes.
All the art. It didn't look like it was 1,600 different artists or even three different artists.
It's very much. He was really astounded by that and really liked all the Disney animators.
Mm.
You know, they actually did... You know, he had like a caricature workshop where, you know, he couldn't tell people how to do it.
Right.
he was he to him it was like seeing,
right?
And but he encouraged people to draw what they see, and so they would do their drawings and then bring them up to him, and Hirschfeld would, you know, he had funny comments and insightful comments.
Yeah,
they were funny but insightful. And I've talked to some of the animators, and you know, they just, that was like being able to, you know, if you're a scientist and you got a chance to talk to Einstein about your theory.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a big deal.
That would be a big deal. But of course, Eric Goldberg did Aladdin. Mm-hmm. Was that 91?
No, it's not 91.
92.
Right, 92. Yeah, I remember when the film came out, and again, I feel like such an old person because I'm going to refer to newspapers. Which, you know, if you're a certain age, you've never had that experience. I'll next talk about whale blubber and kerosene lamps. But when the newspaper ads came out in the Times, there was ads for the Aladdin film. At that time, it was only black and white in the New York Times.
Oh, wow.
And the ads had all these hands and the genie because Hirschfeld was the source material for the genie in Aladdin.
Yeah, we forgot to mention that.
Yes.
It's very, if you look at the image, the drawing of Eric Goldberg in the exhibition, you can see that Hirschfeld has drawn the genie, which is kind of like play within a play or whatever.
Art imitating life, imitating
but
art.
It's very obvious that the genie is a Hirschfeld caricature.
Eric would be the first person to say that.
Yes.
Well, when he looked at the black and white ads, we used to laugh about it because they were Hirschfeld drawings. They were Hirschfeld hands.
That's funny.
You know, and it wasn't like Eric was trying to rip him off. It was definitely an homage.
Right.
But for Hirschfeld, he thought it was funny to open up the paper and see someone else drawing his work.
Yeah.
And it was pretty good.
And in the same paper.
Yes, in the same paper. So, of course, Eric would then... He had wanted to work with Hirschfeld on an animated film. Mm-hmm. And while Hirschfeld decided that that was another career. He was in his 90s, and he thought starting out in animation was probably not the thing he should do. But Eric eventually asked if they could animate some existing drawings. And anybody who has seen Rhapsody in Blue from Fantasia 2000 will see lots of Hirschfeld drawings.
Yes.
Come to life in that film, and it's really incredible. He takes it to the next step. If you've ever wondered, boy, if Hirschfeld was an animator, what it would look like, Rhapsody in Blue is the piece for you.
Exactly. I love watching that because you can see all the different. Oh, that's this drawing, and oh, that's. So I'm going to challenge our listeners. If you can write in and tell us three Hirschfeld drawings that are in Rhapsody in Blue, I might send you a prize or something.
Oh, yeah.
But you have to name three because there are several and you can get one or two. I want you to get three. I want you to get that third one.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I'm thinking of it right now.
It's on your
YouTube.
DVD.
Sorry, Disney.
I don't think it's on YouTube.
Yes, it is. I just looked it up. I just looked it up for another project.
Vimeo. Okay. It's on YouTube.
So you can look it up on YouTube. Do not tell Disney I sent you.
Yeah. You're allowed to slow it down, pause it. You're allowed to do research.
Right.
I want three.
Jay Polk, you're in a special category. We'll send you something anyway.
That's all the drawings we're going to pick out for this episode. But we really encourage you, obviously, to go and look at all the other images because we left out a bunch of stuff. Seinfeld, Michael Jordan.
Rent.
Yeah. Andre Agassi.
Angels in America.
Lots of other 90s drawings. So go to the show. Check it out.
Tell your friends, your relations, people you meet on the street. We're going to try to be coming to you a little bit more frequently.
Yeah.
We took a little hiatus because we've been working on some new projects that we're going to announce very soon.
Yeah. Lots of big stuff coming that I'm really excited about.
Let me tell you, you're going to be excited about.
Yeah.
When you hear about this, you're going to be like, well, no wonder they weren't doing any podcasts.
We've got lots of great episodes in the works that we're excited to bring to you.
We're looking forward to it. So if you have a question, a piece of advice, a complaint about something Catherine said.
And your three Rhapsody in Blue drawings.
Yes.
Send them to, where do we send them? Info. Info at alhirschfeldfoundation.org. You can always go to our website, alhirschfeldfoundation.org, and look up every single drawing he did. We are always adding new ones.
Yes.
Go to our shop. Use that discount code, Seinfeld20, for your Seinfeld mug. It's a pretty good deal.
Get it anyplace else.
I love my Hirschfeld mugs. I have a Wizard of Oz poster mug on my desk that I use as my pen holder. I have a Lassie one at home from the dog show exhibition.
I go straight to the top. I drink right from Hirschfeld himself.
Oh, you drink a self-portrait. Yes, self-portrait. My husband has a self-portrait mug. That's his favorite mug.
Yeah, it's a good one. So they're good. And, of course, in addition to mugs, there's tote bags, T-shirts, there's sweatshirts.
I need a new Jack Lemmon sweatshirt. I got a stain on it. It's like oil or something.
We try to tell her, be careful, but folks.
I'm not wearing any more of my Jack Lemmon stuff if I'm going to be cooking. We're on Facebook, Twitter. Well, we're on Facebook, Al Hirschfeld Foundation, Twitter, and Instagram at Al Hirschfeld. So follow us on all of those. Although, if I had to guess, you probably already are.
Yes. And look for a new episode after this one sooner than the last episode.
Yes, we promise. Don't forget, the podcast is at alhirschfeldfoundation.org/podcasts with an S at the end. S is for
Seinfeld, Seinfeld 20, to get 20% off your Seinfeld mug.
The S is for Seinfeld 20.
We'll see you when we do.
Bye.